Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, rugby fans, and welcome to episode 126 of the DNVR Rugby Podcast. My name is Colton Strickler. I'm your host. Got a good show lined up for everybody today. Excited to jump into it, and we'll jump into it the same way we do every week, and that's by starting off with the breakdown. Breakdown is brought to you by O'Neill's. O'Neill's is the official sportswear supplier to the biggest teams in world rugby, Affinity Park, and the American Raptors. Shop apparel now at O'Neill's.com. That's O-N-E-I-L-L-S.com. So go ahead and start off by talking about some American Raptors stuff that just happened this week. I'm sure you all have probably seen by now, but the American Raptors announced on Tuesday that they hired friend of the program Paul Emmerich to be their next head coach. Paul earned 54 caps with the Eagles during his playing days, played all over the world, all over Europe professionally, also made some appearances with the Sevens team as well. Before accepting the job as the head coach of the American Raptors, Paul was the skills and defense coach for the Houston Sabercats for the last four seasons in MLR. He's also the interim head coach for a five-match stretch there in 2019. Closed out the season, led the team to a 4-1 record. I love the move. He's one of the most successful examples of a crossover athlete in USA Rugby's 15's history, so it makes sense to get him involved with this crossover project, you know, from the standpoint of a guy who lived it, right? He lived it, he did it himself. He wrestled, played football up until college. In college, he played 1 year of football at University of Northern Iowa. Didn't like it, decided to try rugby out, and the rest is kind of history. So he is like the perfect example of the person that the club needs to kind of help him take that next step. I think everybody that's been involved so far has done a good job of pushing him in the right direction, and I think adding Paul to the staff as the head coach is only going to strengthen the staff and the team and just help him keep that momentum going and just help keep him going the right way, keep them going the way they're supposed to go. Like I said, he is the what you look for when you look for a crossover athlete, somebody that comes in, picks it up as quickly as he does, as successful as he was at it. And I think if we're going down the list, he's one of the three or four guys that you would look to. And number two right behind him, or even maybe in front of him, honestly, is Luke Gross, who's also on staff as the defense coach for the Raptors. So you have two of the most successful crossover athletes in USA Rugby history right in the building, working with all these guys, help coaching them up, telling them what it takes, you know, to go play in Europe, to go play international rugby. I think it's a great move, and I'm excited to see what he does with the team. He's been here for a couple of weeks, but it's been kind of quiet, like I've been talking about. You know, I hinted at them making an announcement regarding to a coaching staff last week. But like I said, players report on the 1st. Some of them are starting to trickle back in. So we'll really get a good look at what changes Paul makes and what he kind of does as he puts his stamp on the team here in 2 or 3 weeks. So I'm excited to see it. It's going to be fun to watch. And I will, of course, update everybody as best I can as we move through this transition period. So on top of that, as we're talking about coaching changes, that means that Mark Bullock will move back into his director of rugby role full time. He was kind of wearing two hats to get this program off the ground over this last year. And I always forget to mute my computer. I'm sorry. And then on top of that, Sarah Shabbat is promoted to the assistant head coaching role. She was the interim head coach for the first week of the Uruguay tour. The whole time I was there, Sarah was running the show. She did a fantastic job, led the team to a 1-0 record, picked up a big victory over Uruguay A. So I'm excited to see what she does in her new role as well. That kind of does it for all the American Raptors news for the week. Like I talked about, still nothing really, you know, in terms of fixtures and stuff. Oh, I forgot to mention something for the second week in a row. Something that I forgot to mention last week because I'm still dealing with a little bit of this COVID brain. I was at Raptors captain Tony Tupou, another friend of the program, decided to move on. He left the team, moved back to Seattle to be with his family. I have heard that he will be playing rugby somewhere in 2022, though. I'm just obviously, you could probably put two and two together, but you're just going to wait until they announce it. I've really enjoyed getting to know Tawny during his year that he was here with the team. Really good guy. Was probably the most experienced NFL player on the team. I think he had 4 or 5 years in the NFL. Real leader. Just a nice guy all around. And I'll miss seeing him every day, but I know he's going to rip it up wherever he goes, crush whatever he does in life. So looking forward to seeing him do that. So that does it now for all the American Raptors updates. Like I said, team will report back February 1st, so we're closing in about 2 weeks away now. And then I will, of course, update you on whatever I hear scheduling-wise. There sounds like there's some cool stuff in the works, but again, going to wait until that becomes a little bit more concrete before I get on the microphone and start talking about it too much. So we'll move into the USA Rugby portion of the breakdown now. The LA Sevens has been moved August 27th to 28th. Will now serve as the grand finale of the Men's World Rugby Sevens Series. So that's kind of cool. The tournament becomes that much more important. Get some hardware at the end of it now. It's changed as a result of some logistical challenges caused by COVID. Again, I heard whispers of this over the last week or so. So I'm not really surprised to see the news come down because it's still so hard for several of the countries that are major players. And, you know, the World Rugby Sevens Series still can't really travel freely. They're having a hard time getting around, you know, just what their government decides, you know, on how they handle COVID. So that makes it tough to run international rugby tournaments when a good chunk of your participants cannot make it. So hopefully by moving the LA Sevens back to August, things lighten up kind of like they did last summer. Hopefully that's going to become like a cyclical thing where summers are pretty light in terms of, you know, COVID infections and all that good stuff. That's what we're going to count on. It is kind of a bummer for people that made plans already, booked travel and all that stuff. And I think personally, you know, especially coming from cold Colorado, probably go to LA in March rather than LA in August. That sounds pretty hot. But hopefully the tournament can go on with as few hiccups as possible since they're moving it back to August. And speaking of World Rugby Sevens Series, that picks back up this weekend in Spain. We'll talk more about that and all the rugby you could watch this weekend. But this is your chance to see former Colorado XO and American Raptor David Still in action with the USA Men's Eagles. You can also catch this week's guest, Stephen Thomasine, as well. So make sure you tune into that. Like I said, we'll talk a little bit more about that and all the rugby you could watch this weekend. Right now, we're going to close out the breakdown with some MLR stuff. Things are starting to heat up a little bit. It's been, like I've been talking about, it's been pretty quiet on that front for the last couple of weeks. But as we get closer to the season, more and more stuff starts to happen, more and more stuff starts to come out. And I guess this weekend's your first opportunity to really see what teams are looking like. There's going to be a couple preseason fixtures. There's been a few that have been canceled, probably to nobody's surprise, but it looks like there are a few that are going to go. Old Glory DC, Toronto Arrows is the first one that kind of comes to mind. But I don't think you can watch any of these. I don't think they're going to be broadcast anywhere. They might be, you know, streamed on Facebook or something. But we'll just have to keep our eyes peeled for that. And honestly, one of the most shocking things, you know, to happen, I think, dropped today on Thursday as I'm recording this podcast, was Rugby ATL's head coach and GM Scott Lawrence has resigned from his roles with the team, according to a report by Doug Coyle. Doug cited the passing of former owner Marcus Callaway and the change in ownership, you know, as the reason for the shakeup, which makes sense. But that's an awfully large change to make right before the season, literally 2 weeks before the season. It's a bummer because, you know, from afar, Rugby ATL has always seemed like an organization that has been trying to do things the right way. And you know, the transfer of ownership doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get away from that. And I'm not connected to Rugby ATL at all. I don't know hardly anybody down there. Never really talked to anybody about it. But just as a, you know, casual observer, a fan myself, looking from afar, it just seems like, you know, they were one of the teams that were trying to do it the right way, build their organization up, you know, from the ground up, build a solid foundation. And then that's going to be a big hit losing Scott Lawrence. So hopefully, you know, it's kind of the best for both parties and they go on to do great things. Obviously, keep our eyes peeled for where he lands. I think that's the only thing I wanted to talk about in terms of MLR stuff this week. Obviously, when we get closer to the season, there'll be more stuff to talk about. I'm conjuring up a bunch of different ideas in my head to have a little bit more fun with MLR this season, not just be so cut and dry. So keep your eyes peeled for that, but we'll talk a little bit more about that in the loop, of course. For now, we'll transition into all of the rugby you could watch this weekend. Like I mentioned in the breakdown, the HSBC World 7 Series starts up again this weekend for the USA men. Take on Spain on Friday at 5:34 a.m. Mountain Time. Take on Jamaica on Friday at 11:05 a.m. Mountain Time. And then Argentina on Saturday at 6 a.m. And then you move into playoff stuff. And then for the women's, they take on Canada on Friday, very early in the morning at 1:44 a.m. And then they take on Poland at 7:12 a.m. You can catch the entire tournament on Peacock. And then, of course, for the women, move into playoff stuff on Saturday and Sunday. Moving into the EPC R 2021, we've got Harlequins versus Olympique on Friday at 1 p.m., Bath versus Leinster on Saturday at 6 a.m., Toulouse versus Cardiff on Saturday at 6 a.m., Tigers versus Bordeaux Beagles on Saturday at 8 a.m., Ulster versus ASM Clermont on Saturday at 10:30 a.m., Scarlets versus Bristol Bears on Saturday at 10:30 a.m., Glasgow Warriors versus La Rochelle on Saturday at 1 p.m., on Sunday we've got Sharks versus Ospreys at 6 a.m., Stade Francais versus Canock on Sunday at 6 a.m., Racing 92 versus Saints on Sunday at 8:15 a.m., Munster versus Wasps on Sunday at 8:15 a.m., Montpelier versus Exeter Chiefs on Sunday at 10:30 a.m. You can catch all of those matches on Peacock as well. Moving into United Rugby Championship, we've got Lions versus Sharks on Saturday at 6 a.m. and the Bulls versus Stormers on Saturday at 8:05 a.m. You can watch both of those matches on URC TV. Japan Rugby League One, we've got Kobe Steelers versus Spears on Saturday at 10:30 p.m. Mountain Time. Got Shining Arcs versus Green Rockets on Saturday at 10:30 p.m. as well. Catch both of those matches on the Rugby Network as they continue to show two matches from that competition a week for free, which is nice. We've got the Allianz Premier 15s. Last but certainly not least, we have Wasps FC Ladies versus Labra Lightning on Saturday at 6:30 a.m. Sail Sharks Women versus Saracens Women on Saturday at 7:30 a.m. Then DMP Durham Sharks versus Worcester Warriors Women on Saturday at 8 a.m. Watch all three of those matches on Premier15s.com. That's 15s.com. I think that does it for all the rugby you can watch this weekend. Like I mentioned, there are some MLR fixtures and all that good stuff, but I don't think you can watch any. So if you can and I missed it, tweet me, let me know. Share with me how you can watch some of these matches because I, you know, wasn't finding any information on that. So moving to the interview portion of the show, this interview with Stephen Thomasine is brought to you by Guard Lab. Join the mouthguard revolution with American-made mouthguards that perform, protect, and recover. For more information, visit guardlab.com. First of all, shout out to my guy Connor Hewlett for helping make this interview happen. I've been trying to get Stephen on the show since the Olympics. Back when we were doing all the snake drafts, I really wanted to do a video game one. We both got super busy. Obviously, Stephen's at the Olympics. Tough to do stuff there. I was shooting for after the Olympics, of course. And Steven's always been very open to coming on the show. Just, you know, it's hard to line up schedules and stuff. And especially when you're an international rugby player and you're all over the world, it's a lot easier for me, much harder for Steven. But we finally did get something hammered out, which I'm glad we did. Things slowed down around the holidays. I had the chance to chat with Steven around Christmas time, just talk about his experience at the Olympics and, you know, playing sevens rugby. And we did get some video game talking. Thank goodness. That's what I wanted him on in the first place for. But I thought it went really well. I very much enjoyed talking to Steven. He was a really nice guy. Looking forward to doing some more stuff with him in the future, hopefully. So with that introduction, I hope you all enjoy this conversation with USA Eagle and Olympian Stephen Thomasine. All right, now welcome onto the show a very special guest. We have USA Men's Sevens Eagle and Olympian Stephen Thomasine. Stephen, how's it going, man?
Yeah, doing pretty well. Thanks for having me on. Really excited for this.
Yeah, man. Thank you for joining me. I know we've been trying to get this one worked out for a while now, so I'm happy we finally pinned it down. So first question I ask everybody that comes on the show, Stephen, can you just tell me a little bit about where you're from?
Okay, so I'm originally from Santa Rosa, California. It's about an hour, probably about an hour north of San Francisco. A lot of people know of it because it's in Sonoma County, which is a big wine kind of a big wine area in California, especially, and even in the United States. But yeah, it's where I'm from. I grew up here, spent my whole life until I graduated high school up here and really enjoyed it.
Sounds like a nice place to live.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's really pretty. I love San Diego, and that's where I live now, but I do miss it quite, quite a bit up here when I do come home.
Yeah, I hear you. So, Steven, how'd you get into rugby?
So my uncle is the one who started it for my family. He played at UC Davis back in the 80s and then played for Santa Rosa Rugby Club. And after he was done playing there, he was on the board. And I think he actually is still on the board and whatnot now. But he has three sons, obviously my three cousins, mm-hmm. and they all played growing up. And I just, like, the youngest one is my age. So we grew up around each other a lot. And my family was always putting on rugby camps and whatnot when we were younger. So we used to go to those for fun a bit. And then as I got older, I got into baseball, which baseball in Northern California runs during the same season as rugby, at least at the high school level. Uh-huh. And so in high school, I didn't play much because I was playing baseball. And then my senior year of high school, I quit playing baseball. Mm-hmm. And then I thought I was going to get a football scholarship somewhere. So I quit baseball to kind of focus on that. Well, that didn't come. And so my cousin just had been playing for the high school team, and we went to high school together, me and my cousin, who is my uncle's son. And so he, our senior year, asked me to come out to the team and just play in this, you know, this opening season tournament in Sacramento. And so I did. And yeah, I've been playing all the time ever since.
That's awesome. So, Steven, yeah. I don't know how much you know, but like I spent a lot of time around this, you know, Colorado XO, American Raptors. So I'm talking to crossover athletes quite a bit. And this was a question I asked Caleb Geiger. I think he's going to play for Rugby United New York next season. But he was a baseball player. He played baseball at Concordia University, Nebraska, and he played one season of football in college too. So how is baseball like rugby? Do you think it is at all?
Oh, good question. Definitely think it's more like football than it is like baseball.
Right, for sure.
Baseball is just such a unique sport. Mm-hmm. It's really hard for me to compare rugby to baseball.
Yeah.
And I loved baseball. It was my favorite sport all the way growing up.
What position did you play?
I played catcher most of my life.
Okay.
I caught and played third, but I mostly caught.
So here's some of the things that I've kind of like picked out, right? Like you have your lateral movement, and I guess like while, you know, when you watch baseball, they're not running as much as you do, like, you know, in a sevens match or something, but every time that you have to run in baseball, you're on a dead sprint, right? Like there's no real warm up, you know, jog to go get, like if you're going to, you know, make a play on the ball in the outfield or in the infield, like you get this, like the lateral movement, you're diving, it's very explosive. So I think that's some of the similarities.
Yeah, I definitely think that's skill that crosses over. In baseball, there's a lot of quick twitch, mm-hmm. reactionary movements, and you do get those in rugby. So I definitely, in terms of the sports being alike, I don't think there's much, like in terms of how they're alike, but there are a lot of skills that you can take from one to the other. Like in baseball, it's obviously very high pressure because it's very focused. Let's say you're batting, it's very high pressure. And I guess the same like kind of situations come in rugby with like kicking at poles.
Yeah.
And in some other aspects where, you know, the focus is on you and you're expected to kind of perform at a pretty high level. Baseball is unique in its own in terms of the mental part of the game that is very – In baseball, the mental part of the game is so much more predicated to yourself in terms of like an individual and making plays and hitting the ball. And in rugby, although baseball is a team sport, you're so much more reliant on your teammates in rugby.
Right.
In an aspect, like everybody on the team in both has their, you know, their part and their skill that they add to the team, which is you know, why sport is so great in its own.
Right.
But, you know, I think the mental side of rugby comes with the fitness, especially with sevens. I think once the fitness levels start to raise, I think that's when like the mental game really starts to be played.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That's a good point, honestly, because I know when I was in high school, part of when I played football, like I place kick a little bit, right? And I remember like thinking to myself then that was such a unique position in a way, because you're right, it is such a team sport, and you think about baseball, but a lot of it's you versus yourself, right? It's you not getting in your own head and just doing what you've been practicing doing and succeeding at it. And that's something I would think about in high school a lot, but that's something I didn't even think about right now. That's a good point. So I know that's a little bit different of a question, but I wanted to ask you when I read up on you and saw that you played some baseball.
No, it's good. I'm glad you asked it. It made me think as well, kind of what the similarities and differences are between the two.
That's good to hear. That's the goal. when was rugby, you know, something that you decided you wanted to seriously pursue then?
It was right when I started playing competitively in high school, like really, like the first, I'd probably say 3 months into playing my senior season, I like knew that was the path that I was going to go. Cause I had some like walk-on spots, for football in different places. And so I was still contemplating those, but when rugby kind of started to take over my life, really, I realized that there was something, you know, like there was something there, end goal, that was appealing to me. And that was right when, rugby had been put into the Olympics.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that became a huge motivator, and just like made me realize that there was something kind of, you know, end game with rugby. And,
right.
And I started to look more into it and just started to watch it more as well. But yeah, it was pretty quick. My senior year, we went to the national championships and played in those for high school. And then we got to watch the college final as well. Mm-hmm. And that was a pretty cool moment for me where I realized like, okay, like the, you know, there's like, this is bigger than I thought it was. And
right.
Not only bigger than I thought it was, but there was, you know, more long-term stuff that I could accomplish than what I even realized. And for me with football at the time, I, you know, I knew that the end of the road wasn't too far away. And so I knew I could take rugby further and long and play it longer than I could with any other sport at that time. So that's kind of where that came from for me.
That's cool. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. I can, you know, picture that. It's kind of how it was for me too. Obviously didn't play rugby quite as long as you, but it was like, you know, same thing. I could see football kind of ending for me after high school. Decided to give rugby a try, and I'm still involved in it somewhere or another, which is good, I guess. So I got to take
it. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the beauties of rugby is that even, you know, once you stop playing, there seems to be numerous kind of, what would you say, paths you can go down to stay
for sure.
A part of the family and to help out and I guess continue to grow the environment that like all of us that have played it really enjoy.
For sure. Yeah, I guess that's kind of what it's transformed into. Steven, do you remember like the moment that you realized rugby was fun? I like to ask like, you know, rugby people this question because I feel like they usually have a specific like pinpoint moment.
Ooh, good question. When rugby was fun.
Yeah, like was it in a training? Was it in a match when, I don't know, like I said, I was just talking to Caleb a couple weeks ago and he was talking about his first, when he realized like he was hooked, when he caught the bug. They were playing some match, and he successfully jackled the ball. And he's like, I just got so pumped, and I knew everybody else was fired up. And that's when I was like, man, this is fun. I like this.
Yeah, I think there was a moment. I mean, I always had fun playing rugby, but there was a moment when I was at San Diego State my freshman year. And it was the beginning of my freshman semester, and we were is in Southern California, maybe all of California, like seven seasons during the fall.
Yeah.
So it was like my first semester on campus, and our sevens team when I was at San Diego State was actually quite good. And so we were playing in a tournament in Santa Barbara, and the level of competition kind of kicked up obviously quite a bit from high school when I got to San Diego State, and we were playing some good teams, and we beat a team we beat Long Beach State, I think, in the semifinal, and because I remember the game, and that was when I realized, like, because it was a tough game as well, like, that's when I realized, like, all right, this is really fun. Like, playing higher level stuff than what I had been playing, you know, in the short amount of time. I'd only been playing 6 months at that point, but then I was starting to play, like, higher level stuff that made the competitive part of it, like, really got me going, and that's when I was like, all right, this is really fun.
I'd
say that's probably, like, a good moment.
Yeah,
but you know, that's like Like rugby is fun no
Yeah,
matter what,
right.
right? Like whether you're playing touch or like you're having fun at training, whether it's social or like at the national level. And that's, and that's why I keep like
Right.
waking up every morning excited to play more, because it is fun.
Yeah.
It can be stressful at times, but it's always fun.
That's good, man. There's no use in doing anything you're not enjoying. So that's a good answer. And then I guess maybe I'm jumping a little bit ahead of myself here, Stephen, but do you have a favorite rugby memory? I like asking this question too because it could be literally anything. Like I've talked to people that have said, oh, people that have played in World Cups have said, oh, my favorite rugby memory was like my high school state championship game or, winning
Yeah.
this club competition or something like that. So is there a memory that kind of sticks out in your mind? I'm about to ask you about the Olympics too, so maybe like I said, maybe I'm jumping ahead of myself a little bit here.
I like probably one of my most cherished memories is playing in the 2018 World Cup, because that was in San Francisco in Giants Stadium, where
Yeah.
I went to baseball games growing up a lot of the time. And so being able to play like 45 minutes away from my hometown in a World Cup was pretty special. And like getting, like I said, like getting to run onto the field that I grew up watching games at. That was probably like one of the highlights of my, if not other than the Olympics, like the highlight of my career.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty special weekend for me. I mean, we kind of underperformed. We finished sixth in that one, but just from in terms of having all my family there, and it being such a legendary baseball stadium as well,
Yeah.
right there on the water. I mean, and it was packed out. Like, it was just such an incredible weekend overall.
I remember watching that on TV. It just looked like beautiful too. Like it was nice weather and just like the
Yeah.
way that it looked on TV was it was awesome.
Yeah, they did a great job with that event. So yeah, all of my friends that have been to Giants games packed out Giants games, and that said that was pretty loud compared to a Giants game. So that
Yeah,
was pretty cool too.
that is cool. So like I said, I was about to ask you about the Olympics. So here I go. So I got a couple of questions about the Olympics, Stephen. So I guess it's like, how did you know that you made the team? Was it in the letter, like from those videos? Was that how that all worked?
So that was afterwards. We did that a few days after the selections came out, but it came out by email. That's how our selections always come out for tournaments, is, coach says email's coming out at this time on this day. And then,
So,
you wait for the email to come through. Obviously, like when you're not making teams consistently, those emails can be pretty like grueling to wait for, 'cause I was in that situation for a few years
for
there,
sure.
in my early years with the national team. And so, even for me, who I've been a part of the team pretty consistently over the last 5 years, it was really nerve-wracking for me, because
Right.
it had been, I mean, there's always like that tiny bit of doubt that plays in your mind, but it's also something that, I've personally been waiting for, basically 8 years.
Yeah.
And so, it was a lot of, it was a long journey coming to one kind of decision.
Yeah.
And obviously, like that, whether you make the Olympic team or not does not define your rugby career. But, when you've been working for it for a long time, it comes like becomes a stressful time no matter
For
what.
sure.
But that was how we found out. We found out, I think it was on a Sunday. If I'm, I can't remember for sure, but it came out by email in the afternoon, and a few of us on the team had gone out for lunch and drinks just to kind of like lighten the mood and
Yeah.
spend some time together before it came out. And so we were actually out when the selections came out, and then we all it got quite emotional, so we all kind of went our separate ways and went to go,
Yeah.
just spend some time alone. But yeah, it was an amazing moment,
That's awesome,
for
man.
so many other guys as well, who had waited a long time, and some who got their second shot at it.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. So I know you narrowly missed out on the Rio selection, correct?
Yeah.
So I guess my question is like with COVID, right? Like COVID made it a little bit longer because it pushed it back a year. Was that good or bad? Was that kind of like you trained for 4 years and then the word comes down that the Olympics are getting postponed. Like, was that how hard was that, I guess, to like keep training or like, did you get what I'm asking here? Was that good or bad?
I mean, I think it depends on who you talk to, whether it was good or bad. You know, some guys, like we had a couple guys who had some pretty major injuries before the Olympics that if it would have gone through, would have had no opportunity to play. And so it, obviously getting pushed back here helped them a lot. For me personally, I would say it was more bad for me mentally than it was good. Like I was healthy and in a good place, and you know, I'd obviously been waiting for it, so I was pretty excited for it to come. And then not only just to have it, well, because we remember, I don't know if you remember, but it was like every day there was a new article coming out saying like if the Olympics was going to get
Oh yeah.
postponed or if it was going to get canceled. So
Yeah, even
like
leading
we
up
were
to
riding.
2020, 2021, I mean, right? Like even like all the way through this one, right? Yeah, it was changing all the time.
Basically all the time. So there was, we were dealing with, you know, the constant like media push of what was going on. And then we obviously went into lockdown, which when you're, I guess when you're training so hard, and we were only like 4 months out at that point, when you're training so hard and then it all like goes, you know, goes to nothing that quickly in terms of it, when, once we knew it had gotten pushed back a year. It was a weird position to be in because I, you know, I almost wanted to keep training, but then I knew it was a year away. So, you know, I wanted to give myself a little bit of rest as well so that I could start to gear up to go for another push again. But that was, I mean, that was a tough part at the beginning, but it was just tough mentally for me, having to push it back a year because, you know, you don't know if you're gonna, something could happen in training in the year
For
leading up
sure.
to it. And that's all stuff that, you know, you try and silence in your head as much as possible. But when it, just because it was so close and we were so ready to go, it felt like, and then to have it pushed back was tough. But, you know, in the end, I think for our team overall, I think it was probably a good thing. Cause we had been dealing with some pretty unfortunate injuries. But yeah, I mean, I think that really it's to each their own in those terms. Cause I think some people really benefited from it, and you know, that's something that's obviously really good for a team as well.
I know. I think that's something that people don't really think about because, like me, I have no shot to be in the Olympics. But, you know, when you look at you guys, like that's a whole different, you know, problem that we didn't even think about. It was like you've been working so hard for these last 4 or 5 years, and then, you know, it just gets flipped on its head like that. So, well, everybody was dealing with a little bit different of a situation. That one was very unique. So, I wanted to make sure I asked you about that. So I guess what was it like to make your debut? Could you describe that feeling like when you did run out on the Olympics?
For the Olympic debut, I've told a couple people this, but I was actually less nervous for the Olympics than I was for like maybe any tournament ever. And I think it was just because it had been, I'd been waiting for it so long that like I was so ready for it to be there that I wasn't as nervous. And I really prepared really hard for the Olympics. So from a preparation standpoint of like not only my body but like my mind and kind of what we were doing against other teams, I was in a really good place. But that was, it was really cool because when you run out at the Olympics, you could like see the rings, and so that was pretty cool. Like it became a reality as soon as you step on the field. So that, I mean, it's an experience, you know, and a feeling that I'll never forget. Running out for every game, I remember running out for every game in the Olympics, and it was obviously very weird not having fans because, you know, you run out usually and there's like a buzz that comes from the fans of your team or other teams or teams that want you to beat a certain team or whatever. And so not having that was weird, but it almost it made the Olympics more personal, which I think is why the quality was so good. Is a lot of sometimes people can like feed off the crowd and
For
whatnot,
sure,
but in the Olympics there was no one there, so you really had to create the energy yourself, and it made the game so intense, which was awesome. You know, like that's how you want it to be.
That's super interesting. I didn't even know.
So
Yeah, that's something I never even thought about.
yeah, so that was a pretty, it's it, I'd obviously rather have fans there every day of the week because it's, you know, it's special in rugby to have packed out stadiums. But you know, that especially for that tournament as well, like how everything went down for it. But yeah, running out that first time was really, really special.
That's awesome, man. So I had Cody Melfi on a couple, I think I had him on end of September. And he was talking about, you know, that just because of the rules, like things were a little bit different, so you wouldn't get to enjoy some of the things that you usually would at the Olympics. But he did say that he did get to do a little bit of things, right? Like you could go watch some of the other sports compete, I think, once your sport was over or something like that. So is there anything that you'll remember most about the Olympic experience?
What I'll remember about the most is the, like, just the aura that filled the Olympic Village. I mean, that was something that I can, like, really have told a lot of people about, but it's hard to explain. There was just an aura in the air when you were in the Olympic Village, whether it was just when you were in your building, which Team USA had their own building, or when you're just walking to get food, or you're walking to the gift shop, or whatever it was. It was just everywhere you looked, you were surrounded by, you know, the most elite athletes in their discipline.
Yeah.
And so there was, and everyone there was, you know, there for the same reason, to compete and win. So everyone was focused and respectful and really happy and nice. And there was just a great, great aura about that place. That is something that I like think was really unique about it. And I didn't really know it was going to be like that. Maybe it's not like that for everybody, but that's something that I really noticed.
That's cool. Did you get to meet anybody super famous?
Yeah, a few of the basketball players. When we did the opening ceremonies, all of Team USA was together, and they were not only the men's but the women's basketball players as well. They were all really cool and easy to talk to, and quite, you know, open to talking, which obviously they're probably the most popular people there. So it would be easy for them to kind of keep their distance, but they were not that way at all. They were really cool.
Nice.
And really fun to talk to.
That is cool. How were the beds? I know there was a lot of talk about the beds. I saw Cody Melfi jumping on the beds. It looked okay to me.
Yeah, there was. That became like the story of the Olympics, I feel like. But the beds were fine for me personally. But I'm like 5'9", 195 pounds. You know, I'm not like Danny Barrett or Joe Schroeder, like 6'4", 6'6", you know, 240 pounds. So for me, they weren't the worst. A lot of people thought that was like a COVID thing that they put those in for, but it was like the plan the whole time. So
right.
Someone wrapped up the COVID part into it, which wasn't true, but you know, they were sturdy. I think, like, you know, a bunch of people, Cody and other people, put out TikToks and stuff of them like jumping on it and whatnot. So they were sturdy. For me, I actually slept great. And I don't know if it was the beds themselves or a combo of like me being so excited to be there that I like really wasn't worried about anything. But I had no problems with them. But some of the other guys that were a bit taller, like, there's no way the basketball players.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to ask. Because isn't that Rio? Didn't they stay on, like, their own, like, yacht or something like that?
Yeah.
So, hey, I wonder what they're – we got to get them on and talk about that, I guess.
So they had their own hotel in Tokyo.
Okay.
They stayed at. But, you know, like, there's no way, like, them – they would have fit on those beds or would have wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hear you. And I guess, like, I did see a couple of videos of people like jumping and they would break their bed. But in fairness, like, if I was trying to break my bed, I could do it too. My bed's not made of cardboard or whatever. It's pretty easy.
Yeah, exactly. you could break it if you want.
If I really wanted to, I could.
But no, it wasn't that bad.
That's good. All right, Steven, I got a couple video game questions to ask you, and then I'll let you go, man. So originally, like, when I reached out to you about doing this, I was doing these snake drafts, like, leading up to the Olympics. So, like, this media company, we do this podcast through DMVR. There's a Broncos, there's a Rockies, there's a Nuggets. So I was getting guys from each of those beats on. I was talking to them, and I was building, like, sevens teams out of, like, all-time great Broncos and all-time great Nuggets and stuff. So I originally reached out to you because I wanted to do that with you about video games, but – you know, obviously things kind of didn't work out, but I still did build a video game sevens team. If you'd like to hear it, I would like you to grade it. This is in no particular order, so feel free to rip me apart and include whoever I left out. So I'm going to start off.
Okay, yeah, go for it.
All right, starting off, we got Donkey Kong. I know he's kind of big, but he's a gorilla. I think gorillas move pretty quickly. Even if we just have Donkey Kong on our team just for carries, I know he might be kind of a little bit of a defensive liability because he might be a little bit slower than some of the other people and video game characters we have. I think he'd be a good addition. I think Pac-Man would be sneaky good because that's, you know, he's all about evading. He's very evasive. And then, you know, when the time is right, he attacks those ghosts. So that's good for the defense. Got Sonic, obviously, because he's fast. Kratos, I think Kratos would be good. He's built. He's got the build for it. I think the fitness might be there, too. This one, I kind of went a little bit outside the box, I guess. I have Michael Vick from Madden 2004. Because you couldn't tackle him. He was just way too fast.
I guess that does. I mean, that counts as a video game character.
And so I think Michael Vick, if we played him a little rugby, he might be pretty good too, just like actual Michael Vick in real life back in the day. And then I closed it out with two Mortal Kombat characters. I think that Sub-Zero and Scorpion would probably be good additions. You got like Scorpion with that like chain hook thing, so if anyone got away, he could just, you know, hook him back, and then, you know, Sub-Zero, you could freeze people. So I think that would be good for fens and for tackles.
Yeah, that's a quality team. I love the Michael Vick pick. Pac-Man was not, I didn't expect that one. I expected Donkey Kong, and he came.
Yes.
I thought Sonic would be in there too, but I didn't get the Pac-Man one. I think that's a pretty good one.
Yeah, I kind of went outside the box for that one, the Michael Vick one. But that's what you have to do in these, you know. You got to think a little bit.
Yeah, I think I could throw in like Mario or Luigi just because they have good jumping ability.
And they can shoot fire. How big they are. Right, like shooting off fireballs and stuff is probably helpful.
Yeah, that'd be pretty beneficial. But I just think for their jumping ability, it would be good on the sevens field.
Yeah.
You know, I think Kratos brings some good leadership. I mean, obviously we could throw in Master Chief in there. Just a solid all around game. you know, kills aliens, flies spaceships. You know, I think that he brings some good leadership. Everyone seems to be scared of him, so you know, that could be a good one as well. And I probably put Ash Ketchum as my head coach.
Okay.
You know, obviously he's used to managing teams.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe he has a little bit of experience in there. But no, I think your team overall is pretty good. It's funny. I think it'd be cool to let more people fill out their teams without knowing kind of what you've picked, because that would be interesting to see what different combinations people put together that are actually gamers, I guess.
I'll work on that. We have a gaming center at the NVR. I'll work on that for you. So before this podcast goes out, I guess a couple weeks we'll get that done.
Okay, I'm in. Right. That's something I get everybody on my team to do the games. Oh,
love it. Let's do it then, man. That sounds like a great idea. I think too, honorable mention, I think Diddy Kong would kind of be sneaky good too.
Ooh.
Because he's got like the, you know, the strength and of a monkey, right? Like monkey's muscles are like corded steel. So he's got that going for him. He's a little bit smaller, so he might be a little bit more elusive and quicker. So he was an honorable mention. He could be, you know, first guy off the bench. He's a finisher.
Yeah, there you go, for creating a bench. Throw him in there.
Yes. All right, man. I didn't want to ask about streaming, though. So how'd you get into streaming?
Remember when, I don't know if you remember, but Ninja, the streamer, did a Fortnite stream with Drake and like Travis Scott, which is kind of where everything started to go crazy for streaming. And so I thought that was really cool. I was like, man, people are actually actually playing video games and like making money off of it. And I just thought it was a really kind of cool part of gaming that hadn't really blown up yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to do it for a while. And then it wasn't until COVID that once COVID happened and, you know, I realized like we were shut down and
that's all you could do.
I was like working. I was working out in the morning and then, you know, we were all stuck at home trying, like, no one knew anything at that point. I mean, kind of really knows anything.
I know. But, so it's stumbling through. So.
but, you know, I started to stream, And you know, I probably wouldn't have done it if it wasn't for COVID. I started to have a lot of fun with it, and I was playing Call of Duty and Fortnite and stuff. And then I started to do these rugby rewatch streams where I would watch back old tournaments with fans, whoever wanted to come and watch, and like break specific stuff down so they could kind of see what I was reading during that moment. And you know, I explained how different teams like to play and how we like to play against different teams and all this stuff. And so those kind of became a really cool part of my streaming. And I haven't streamed as much since we got back to training, which would have been kind of like October, November of last year. Just because it's really difficult to do both and enjoy both of them. But I want to get back into doing them a little bit more frequently. But I mean, it was a really cool way for me to connect with fans that I had never like been able to experience before. It's one thing when people, you know, are DMing me on Instagram or something like that, and I try and reply to as many as I can. And then when streaming, it was so much easier to converse with people because I was obviously able to talk. They were able to type in questions and whatnot like that. So I was just way more conversing, and I became pretty close with several people that came into my stream to watch me play and hang out and stuff like that. And I think it's pretty. It was just a really cool way for me to interact with people that I hadn't gotten before, which is one of the reasons why I miss doing it. So I want to do it more again.
That's awesome, man. We got to see you back on. What do you like to play? You've been mainly playing Warzone, or
I haven't been playing Warzone. So there's this game called Escape from Tarkov. And it's a computer game, but it's like a hyper realistic first person like survival game. And that's kind of what I've been playing for the last year or so. And I haven't been playing too much video games over the last year just because how busy rugby has been. But when I do play, that's been the one that I've been playing mostly. I just can't stop playing.
I'll have
There's
to.
nothing else that makes me want to play it more than that. But it's a pretty fun game. So when I get back in stream, that's probably what I'll play
All right. I'm gonna have to
when we
check it
get back.
out.
Yeah.
All right, Steven, that's all the questions I had for you, man. This was fun. I usually leave this last part open if you want to, shout out socials or your Twitch stream or whatever, feel free.
Yeah, sure. My socials are scuba steve underscore 09. And I think that my Twitch name is the same. But yeah, I mean, thank you for having me. It's really cool to be able to do these interviews with people who have played rugby and even those who haven't. I really enjoy it. So yeah, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, man. Thank you, Steven. Have a good one.
Awesome, bro. Thank you.
Right. I hope everyone enjoyed that conversation with USA Eagle and Olympian Steven Thomasine. No, I certainly did. Thanks so much to Steven for taking some time to chat with me. Really appreciate it. And I want people to send in, like we were doing with the graphics. Didn't have time to make a graphic for this one. But if you had to build a sevens, rugby team out of video game players, I would like to hear it. I know Steve and I talked about we got to do something. We got to get something together so he can pass this out to his teammates and see kind of what they say. Still have some time to do that. Oh, that was a lot of fun. Hope everybody enjoyed that. Now we'll go ahead and transition over to the required reading portion of the show. I'm assigning you my own piece this week, everybody. I've been talking about this piece for weeks. I've been working on this piece for months. Finally came out. I'm proud of it. I'm happy to see it doing well so far. People seem to be enjoying it. So the required reading this week is my piece entitled The Lateral. Will rugby attacking concepts ever be fully adopted in the game of football? So, like I said, I've been working on this piece since October, and I'll kind of explain my thought process, how kind of it all came together. And I've seen a lot of people say, a few people online have already come to me and said, "You took PFT Commenter's idea." And I thought I made it very clear in the piece that the idea to write this piece came from a question that he asked Lane Kiffin a few years ago on Pardon My Take. About the same topic. Like he planted the seed. He's been the driving force. He's been banging the drum for a couple of years now. Kind of like based on my situation, right? I'm around these crossover guys all the time. I'm around all these former high-level football players that are transitioning into professional rugby. So, I've been watching a lot of football. The NFL has, it was kind of lost its appeal to me the last few years, but this year I've been like all into it. I can't get enough. Watch more games ever. I mean, I probably watch more games than like at the peak of my football fandom when I'm in, 7th or 8th grade. I probably watch the same amount of games. And this year particularly, I've noticed like There's been a lot more laterals, whether it be like a change of possession, was like a fumble or an interception or something. Like guys were catching the ball, you know, trying not to get tackled and like offloading it. Looked like a rugby play. And it just kind of made me think, like, PFT's been asking these questions on this podcast for a while now. The first instance I heard of it was when he asked Lane Kiffin a few years ago. And so just kind of kicked up all, you know, this idea in my brain. And I started to ask around, you know, some of these guys on the Raptors team and what they kind of thought of it, because they have a unique perspective now that they've played, you know, D1, SEC, you know, Power 5, college football. Some of them played in the NFL. And now they're playing rugby and they're starting to see like how it could work. So I thought they had a unique perspective. And then, you know, from there, I wanted to find as many football people as I could and ask them the same question. And I was kind of trying to find football people that weren't too familiar with rugby. And most of the people I talked to for the story weren't very familiar with rugby, which is good because I wanted to see just kind of like from a football specific mind what they thought about this idea and if they thought that it could ever work from these people that have been around the game of football for their whole life, if they could see a world in which this would happen. I went into it like, I understand the risk, right? Like, and I try to lay this out in the story too. I don't think you should ever go into a football game. I don't think you should ever open up a game with this, right? You shouldn't do this unless you need to. But my whole idea was, there are times in a football game where this would benefit you more than throwing a Hail Mary, right? If you're pinned, if you're on the minus side of the field, like I think is what the football people call it, right? If you're on your own territory, you're on your side of 50, and you need to score a touchdown or move the ball quickly down the field, it seems like throwing a higher percentage pass, a shorter pass to a playmaker, and then running some sort of, you know, set like play off it, like you would in a rugby back line, it just seems like that would work better than hucking a ball down the field and just hoping that your team catches it, because you're putting the ball in the hands of a playmaker who could then, you know, use the ball to confuse a defense or catch them flat-footed or something like that. You're at least giving yourself a chance to make a play, and you're doing it in a way where defenders probably wouldn't see it coming, right? They don't prepare for that type of stuff. So I went into it with that mindset, and I was surprised to learn, you know, from the football people that I talked to, is like they came into it with an open mind. I fully expected to go into these conversations, some of these football coaches that I talked to, and them just shut it down immediately, like, yeah, that would never work. No, but ball security is too important, which I went in knowing that too. But I was surprised to hear that they were open to it. They thought, you know, they know better than anybody that football's an ever evolving sport. Offenses change every year. And it's super trendy. Like football offenses run whatever's working at the moment. That's why you've seen a transition from super heavy stuff to triple option stuff now to, you know, some spread stuff to the RPO stuff. And this very well could be the next, you know, iteration of football offenses. And it was kind of cool to hear football people tell me that without having to pull too hard. So like I said, I go into it knowing like, this is not a sustainable thing to run every single play, but if you did this once or twice a game and you could have success with it and you prove that, you know, running this play where in a situation where a Hail Mary is only going to hit 20% of the time, this play hits 60% of the time, you know, that those are numbers that football coaches lean towards. And just an interesting piece all around, like I said. I reached out to a lot of different football people. I had some promising things from some colleges around here, but ultimately fell through, which is why it took so long, which is why I made people wait so long. But you know, it was really fun to write. It was really fun to work on. I'm really liking, you know, just seeing people break it down and discuss it and give me what they think and how they would do things. It was cool to see PFT shared it. If you watch the games this weekend, the Dallas Cowboys ran two lateral plays, one in the first quarter that didn't work very well. It looked like the design was there, the execution wasn't. And then they ran one play on the final drive that was like literally just like a switch. Like it was a deep drag, I think, to CeeDee Lamb, who gave the ball to Amari Cooper, who was like trailing behind him, ran up the sideline, I think who it was. So you could see like people are starting to do it more. And like I said, I found, you know, a good probably 10, 12 instances of it in the NFL this year. I tracked down all the clips watching football became like a chore because I was always watching for laterals, and if it would happen, I'd go find the play online and I'd bookmark it. But it was really fun to work on. I'm glad to see it doing well. I'm glad to see people reading it, enjoying it, breaking it down, tell me their thoughts on it, because that's what it's all about. It was just like a unique way to blend the two worlds, and especially this unique position I'm in now, covering, you know, these crossover athletes. I had, you know, unlimited rugby resources. The football side was a little bit harder, but some people put me in touch with some other people, and I thought it turned out very well. So if you haven't read that yet, I will, of course, link it in the article that houses this podcast and put it in the description as well. You also find it on our Twitter at @DNVR_rugby. Read it. Tell me what you think. Tell me, you know, if you think that you could see the NFL move into this or just football in general. And it's going to be something that I'm going to be looking for every time I watch a game now. I just want to see some people, like more people, try it, because I do think that it could be beneficial. And all it takes is one creative person to do it a few times and do it successfully, and then everybody will jump on the board. So that's a required reading for this week. That's a little bit longer than usual, but something I've been working on for a while. So let me know what you think. We'll then close the show out with the loop. Best way to keep up with everything we got going on at DNVR Rugby is to follow along on Twitter at @DNVR_rugby and at Colton Strickler. Don't have any other huge projects in the works. That was kind of my off-season piece I've been working on, obviously, for a while now. But like I said at the top of the show, I'm conjuring up some ideas to have some fun with MLR this season. Obviously, with that happening in a couple of weeks, need to get cranking on that. But I think it should make it fun. I've been reading a couple different books, and I got some ideas from those books that I want to employ. We'll see how that goes. And I will close the show by saying thank you. So for those that don't know, DNVR Rugby turned 2 years old on January 15th, last Saturday. I'm having a ton of fun doing the I honestly feel like I'm having more fun doing podcasts and just DNVR Rugby in general with all this different content and this different direction, you know, with all these crossover guys. It's been more fun to do work now than ever before in my life. And I know that it wouldn't be possible without the people that listen and read and interact and support. So I'm so appreciative of all of you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for everything, really. Like I said, I wouldn't be able to do it without the people that support, and it means a lot to me. So thank you. I'm excited to keep up all this momentum that we've got rolling into 2022. It's just going to be a good year. Just know it. So thank you again, bottom of my heart. Happy birthday, DNVR Rugby. Looking forward to many, many more. So hope you all had a great week. Hope you have a great weekend. Enjoy all the matches this weekend. Catch you all back here next week.